Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins on the local news roundup. Opposition from Charlotte to our city hosting the 2020 Republican National Convention emerges just as we become the front runner. The CIAA tournament, our city's largest annual event, begins looking for a new home. David Tepper officially becomes the owner of the Carolina Panthers and does something unusual for a Panther owner. He holds a press conference and declares a new day. And locals react to President Trump's pick of Brett Kavanaugh to replace Anthony Kennedy on the Supreme Court. Our roundtable of reporters is ready to detail those and many other stories in this hour. And those reporters include, they being, David Borax from WFAE News.
Hello, Mike.
And Os Helms is here, education reporter for the Charlotte Observer.
Back from the grand tour of the Midwest.
Oh, good for you. Glenn Birkins is editor and publisher of QCityMetro.com.
Good morning.
And Eric Spann, senior staff writer for the Charlotte Business Journal.
Good morning, Mike.
You can reach us in all of the usual ways, but also you can watch us on Facebook Live because Eric's here this morning in a tie. It appears that Charlotte is the GOP's choice to be the host city for the 2020 Republican National Convention. In normal times, civic leaders would be all gathered at Trade and Tryon doing their happy dance, but these are not normal times. As it became apparent that the only other city in the race, Las Vegas, was going to be spurned in favor of us, well, that's when the trouble began.
Look, there's a difference between bipartisanship and normalizing erratic, hurtful, and harmful behavior to this country. Why should we be the ones to glad hand that form of really evil?
That's Democratic City Councilman Braxton Winston on this program yesterday, although he's not completely against holding the convention here. He believes we haven't been given the opportunity to have a civic discussion about it. Is he right?
Well, I think one of the things that's really interesting about the way this has played out is, remember this bid started months and months ago, and no one really raised much of an issue.
Is that because we thought we wouldn't get it?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know why, if that is the reason, I don't know why that would be the first thought, because Charlotte just had a convention in 2012, so it wasn't ridiculous to think that Charlotte had a chance.
Well, and given Charlotte's image consciousness, you have to wonder how much of this was that we went after it and nobody else did. You know, we're kind of like the middle school student.
So now we don't want it?
Yeah, the middle school student who tries out a new fashion and nobody else is wearing it. So you're like, oh, no, my mom made me buy this.
You know, remember, I don't like these shoes after all.
Remember back when Vi Lyles first brought up this idea and there was a bunch of reporters in the room in her office there and nobody really said anything. You know, this is our civic business here. We try to recruit conventions and businesses to join us. And I think everybody was kind of thinking about it that way. But as people started to think about it, you know, questions began to be raised. And as things in Washington evolve the way they have, I think questions have been raised about whether this is a good thing.
And I think the urgency of it as well. It's easy to talk about something in theory, but then when you realize that, wow, this is really going to happen, that's when people stop and think about it.
Probably have deadlines, right?
Tariq Bakari was on the program with Braxton Winston yesterday. Tariq is a Republican, a city councilman, and he is in favor of bringing this here. And I asked the question to him, well, why did it only seem to be us and Las Vegas? And Las Vegas, the city, is not involved. It's a private organization trying to bring it to Las Vegas.
And the GOP chair.
The city was like, no, thank you very much. Why is that? Why are we really the two cities? He said there were others that were secretly behind the scenes.
Said there were 12 or something. I was very surprised to hear that.
I was going to say the RNC site selection chairman was in town this week, and I spoke to him, and he went through the—
I'm sorry. Why was there a site selection? It's going to be one place. It's going to be at the arena if it comes, right?
I don't have the power to solve all of these riddles, Mike. I'm just telling you what I encountered.
Maybe he could expense out the trip to a dozen cities.
I'm sorry.
I think he needed a new Panthers pennant, so he stopped by Charlotte. But his perspective was that they started this process intentionally trying to keep it low-key and that there were seven cities that they vetted and wound up with the two. Now, I mean, you know, take that for what it's worth.
He wanted to know if there could be a dome on the stadium by 2020.
But, I mean, I think it's clear. Can we say elephant in the room when we're talking about the – I mean, it's too obvious, right? We can't say that. it's clear that with the Trump presidency and all this controversy, obviously cities were scared about the potential public relations backlash. I don't think that's really, you know, shocking, earth-shattering news, is it?
It's not earth-shattering at all. If you looked at Facebook Live this morning, the crowds that are forming in London in opposition to President Trump, this will not be just a normal RNC convention. It simply will not be. And at worst, it has the potential to be reminiscent of Chicago 1968.
I was going to ask about that. And should we be concerned about
that? We absolutely should be concerned about that. I think there are
because of the violence or because of the image problem?
Violence. I think there could be violence. I would not want to be Chief Kerputney if this convention comes here, because people will descend on this city from all over.
I think it was Tarek yesterday who said he's talked to Chief Putney, and Chief Putney says he can handle it, and if Chief Putney says he can handle it, he believes Chief Putney can handle it.
Well, I'm not questioning whether Chief Putney can handle it, and he would not say anything other than we can handle it, and I'm glad he said that. But in reality, this has the potential to make what we saw during Keith Scott look like a Sunday picnic. And I don't know if we fully understand that.
So is that what you meant when you wrote a column in
Q City Met? I did not write it. Someone else wrote it.
Oh, well, the column begins with the sentence, is the GOP simply too politically toxic for Charlotte to host the Republican National Convention in 2020? Is that what was meant by toxic, or is it simply political toxicity?
I think it's a little of both, and I'm very leery of you know, making this purely about politics, because I don't think we would be having this discussion if Mitt Romney or George Bush or Ronald Reagan or whoever, some other Republican, was in the White House. I think even if you're for the convention coming here, I think you have to be honest and concede we're in a very, very difficult place, and we're in a very different place. As a nation.
When you combine your concerns about bringing the convention here and the potential toxicity of that and the potential violence that could occur in the streets, and you look at what happened yesterday at that hearing in Washington, which they'll be talking about on 1A this morning in about an hour, what message should that be sending to the Republicans or to the rest of us? I mean, it's not just a Republican problem. Clearly, there is a problem. An unsolvable brick wall. We talk about building a wall. There's already one in existence between one side of the aisle and the other.
Well, yeah, and I think, but when you ask that question, Mike, I mean, then people just line up on their sides again and say, well, you know, if you're a Democrat, the Republicans are intractable. If you're a Republican, you say the Democrats are intractable, and that's why you don't really see much movement on this. I mean, it's kind of the same argument over and over again. I wanted to go back to what Glenn's talking about with the potential for not just bad public relations, but, you know, violence in protests and things like that. The other side of it is, and I think those are all very valid concerns, so I'm not really arguing, but the other side of it is people who support the convention note that there's a $50 million federal security grant and there's a perimeter, and so this will be, as the RNC site selection chairman said, when you would expect him to say, this will be the safest place on earth. I don't know. None of us know, but I think it's very much on everyone's minds, whether they're saying it or not, the potential for this to turn ugly, you know, given the political rhetoric right now.
But we might get that balloon, right?
Probably will.
Braxton Winston yesterday told me he's still on the fence about whether or not this convention should be hosted by Charlotte. Fellow Democrats Justin Harlow and LaWanna Mayfield have both said that they will vote no at Monday's city council meeting.
If this was a different convention, that I would not have as much concern. But when I look at the majority of my community and the fact that it is very diverse, and there are also a large number of women within my community, that there is concern as far as the language that comes out of this administration.
And some see a Charlotte decision to host this convention as a betrayal of the city's stated principles and a moral decision. Can that be successfully argued?
I think it can. I think this comes down to, do you view President Trump as just someone on the spectrum of, you know, George W. Bush, Barack Obama? And those people are going to say, look, the Republicans here hosted the Democratic convention. They weren't ugly about it. They didn't try to turn Barack Obama away, even though he was disliked by many people here. If you view him as someone who is truly a threat to our form of government, to our country, to many of its people, then you have to say he is substantively different. And even if you could be guaranteed that there was no violence, that there are going to be people who say we should not be giving him the nod. It's fascinating to me that Braxton is saying we should have a civil conversation about evil, because that's about the strongest word you can use for the type of person who should not be invited here regardless.
It was his word. I want to bring up again.
It was his word.
It's his word.
And it's a sign of the times that we're in, that we're having this discussion. I mean, why do we pursue conventions and businesses here? Because of the economic benefits of it. And normally that's not an arguable point here in Charlotte, but the situation is different right now. And let me just point out one other thing about Braxton Winston, which is that he works as a stagehand here in Charlotte. This is his lifeblood. You know, when that convention comes here, he's expecting to get work out of it. And he's, in spite of that, he is raising all these questions about it. And I think that shows the level of the political discourse that we're at right now, where we have to question some things that we've always done.
Well, I think one thing that's fascinating about this is that you have Vi Lyles, a Democratic mayor, the first female African-American mayor in this city's history, and she, in essence, is going to the mat for this convention. So this would seem to me to have a lot of political legacy implications based on whether it goes well or not.
I want to talk about Vi, but let's go back to economic development first, because here's City Councilman Tariq Bakari on this program yesterday talking about just that.
This is not about one man. A lot of people try to say, well, this is different. This is about economic development opportunities. This is not something where we can go out and say, hey, do you guys want us to do this? Because what's next? Do we say, hey, do you want us to bring Amazon's distribution center here?
So he's essentially saying we don't need to talk about this. But he also said we should find that Charlotte really wants to be world class. And if that's really what we want to be, we would find a way to overcome these objections and reach across the aisle in the spirit of trying to heal the wounds that are dividing us. Could we become the poster child for healing the divisions in the country?
Well, I think the first part, the world class, which is always an unfortunate phrase, but since it's uttered, if this is a plum for world class cities, how come no one else seems to want it? I think would be what people might respond with.
Would they be having this discussion in New York, Chicago, Los Angeles?
One would assume they had that discussion behind closed doors,
right, because
and didn't
there's not
submit a bid.
Yeah. Now,
because of safety concerns or because of morality issues?
We don't want it.
Yeah.
Not worth the risk.
Risk, political risk, but also I think there are, people in, let's look at it this way. Every major city in the U.S. is a blue city, and we're talking about the biggest red event of every 4 years coming to there. I mean, I think we're in a situation where, the strong blues are saying we don't want the reds here.
There are lots of state fairgrounds around the country in flyover states. Why not have it there? That would be a unique convention.
Let's do it in Shelby.
No, I'm serious. I'm dead serious about that. If no big city, because they're all blue, wants it, why not go to the base and put it in the state fairgrounds?
Well, TV markets.
Thousands of people converge on the location. There are lots and lots of hotel rooms that are needed. We all remember, I think we were all here in 2012.
Yes.
They were spilling over into surrounding cities. Sometimes people were not happy with that. We do at least have more hotel rooms this time around. So as an economic development thing, we're probably better positioned. But the Center City is just closed off. And if you were not here in 2012, as many of your listeners were not, people can't imagine what a police state it becomes.
This was
in the
Fortress
immediate vicinity.
Charlotte.
Yes.
It was hard to get in downtown, although you felt very safe once you got here because there were police officers from every department all over the southeast on the streets. Every street corner had four or five officers everywhere.
Right.
And that's part of the argument that it will be
ID.
Safe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what people who support it say. That's why it'll be safe. So we'll find
Center
out.
City might be, but.
Right.
So let's talk about Mayor Vi Lyles, and we'll do, because she really is going to the mat for this, and we'll talk about that in a moment with our roundtable of reporters as the weekly news roundup continues. News on Charlotte Talks. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Our weekly news roundup underway here with Eric Spanberg from the Business Journal and Dawes Helms from the Charlotte Observer, Glenn Birkins from QCityMetro.com, and David Borax from WFAE News. We were talking off the air about how the times really are different. This is not 2012. This is not the Democratic National Convention. And even though, as you said, Ann, there were a lot of people in this area who did not particularly like President Obama when he came here to be renominated for his second term, it was a very peaceful time. There were protesters. They never got out of control. They really couldn't get out of control, I don't think, because of the military hardware and the police and the security that was in place.
Yeah, there were anarchists running around after hours and after curfew and kind of trying to get arrested, and the police were just kind of following them around and saying, nah.
And the police were very low-key, very nice. Anyway, times are different, and some of you were saying off the air that this may be something to really be concerned about. Not so much downtown,
right,
because it's going to be cordoned off and barricaded, essentially.
Just as it was in 2012. The thing that I was mentioning to Glenn during the break, the thing that I've thought about a lot this week is how do they police and patrol other parts of town, other parts of the city, because there is such intense focus and manpower around the convention, which is understandable. But given that these are different times, given that we're coming up on the one-year anniversary of Charlottesville, for example, I think that is certainly a very valid
concern. If you're going to protest, you're going to want to be on television, and all of the TV will be here, downtown.
But remember, Mike,
you've got to be out in South Park or Huntersville.
They'll follow the protest.
That's what I was going to say. There's going to be 15,000 media. If there's something going on, some of the media are going to be out there. And hopefully I'm wrong about all this and it's peaceful, but I'm just saying there is a lot of potential for combustible situations.
The other thing that I would point out is that downtown is very different than it was in 2008. Yeah. We have many, many more people living downtown. Cordoning off downtown is going to be much more difficult when you have people living along Tryon or Trade Street or whatever. So there will be unique challenges. Like Eric, I'm not predicting violence. I'm not saying violence will happen. But I am saying we would be foolish to overlook that possibility.
I also have to remember that this is a social media world now. This is a live stream world. So like when Bree Newsom took down the flag in South Carolina, she did not call the local television station and the newspaper to record it. They had their people there videoing,
That's
and
right.
that went national. So I think if somebody decides we're going to do an action at South Park Mall, we're going to do an action at, you know, fill in the location.
It's a live stream opportunity.
They will be tweeting their followers, and like somebody said, the media will follow, but they will be there live streaming. So I think there could be actions cropping up all around the greater Charlotte area.
There's going to be a vote at City Council on Monday night about this, and it's going to split probably along it's not going to split along party lines. We'll talk about that in a second. But yesterday we had, as I said, Republican Tariq Bakari from City Council and Braxton Winston, the Democrat, who's brought all this up as a point of discussion. And they had what I think could be described as an amiable, if not sometimes heated and very descriptive conversation about the pros and cons of all of this. And I would encourage people who missed yesterday's show to go to our website and listen to it, or go to download the podcast and listen to it, because it's an exercise in how we should be having
it. Was a model of civil debate, if
exactly
you ask me.
Right.
And listen to the very end, because all of us who have been on the receiving end of your, you have 30 seconds to answer this. We're talking about how Braxton
Best
Winston
ever.
May have done the strongest closing, whether you like it or hate it, that has ever come in those last 10 seconds.
No spoilers.
Seconds.
In any broadcast, in the world, anywhere, at any time. Okay, it should be pointed out that our Democratic mayor, Vi Lyles, has pretty much been the point person on this, in this effort to bring the convention to town in 2020. And because of the emotions that this has engendered, she may look back on this moment in time as the moment when the honeymoon came to an end.
People have asked me, how could I support this Republican convention? And I want you to know that I can't ignore the increasing incivility and divisiveness that's going on in this country. I came to this decision because my job is to represent every citizen in this community. And what I would hope is that we would have the ability to showcase what's right about working together in government here in Charlotte.
That's Mayor Lyles speaking to the Democratic Women of Mecklenburg County meeting the other night. After she left, they voted against having the convention here. And even Mayor Lyles' daughter has been tweeting against the decision to bring the convention. Her daughter, Aisha Alexander, tweeted, "I am both disappointed and disgusted by the potential of a Trump RNC coming to Charlotte." But she quickly went on to point out that her mother, the mayor, is doing what she always has done, making lemonade from lemons. Did Vi Lyles do something wrong by trying to nab this event, or will most people see this the way her daughter does?
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's certainly not my place to say whether she's right or wrong. It's going to be the voters' place to say it. But what does stand out to me is what I mentioned earlier, is that this is a very large political risk. And Vi Lyles, throughout her career,
is this her HB2 moment?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. We have to wait until 2020 to see how it turns out. Right. That's the difference here. But Vi Lyles, before she became mayor, and even as mayor so far, has been a very cautious, methodical politician. And in this case, she may have made the decision very methodically. But as I say, this is a big, big risk. She's putting a lot on the line here.
Eric is 100% right. Her legacy has the potential to rise and fall on this one convention. If it goes well, she'll look great. People may not like it, but it will do her no harm. If this goes badly, it has the potential to inflict permanent damage.
Her discussion about how this can be an opportunity for Charlotte to showcase its inclusion of diversity is an important one here. I think that's what she's hanging the whole thing on. I think what maybe, if there was a problem with calculations on this politically, it's that Democrats right now, many Democrats are not willing to hear that. And when we say diversity, we're talking about diversity of opinions as well as diversity of race and other issues. And I think right now we're in a situation where a lot of Democrats are not willing to make that step over the line.
It was also interesting that Vi's daughter tweeted that this did not originate with the city or the mayor, but with Republican congressmen and senators. Mm-hmm. And that's another part of this puzzle. If the Democratic City Council says no, you know, makes a big scene of throwing this back in the Republican Party's faces, there will be consequences on the national level
and in
Raleigh, in the state General Assembly. Yeah. Right. There's a lot of Republicans who have Charlotte's destiny in their hands.
Well, somebody from this, I think it was Steve Harrison and Jim Morrill wrote about the fact a couple of days ago in the Observer that the CRVA brings conventions to town all the time, and they don't go to the city council and ask, should we bring the convention here? So if the city council says, no, we don't want it, can't they just go and bring it anyway?
Oh, sure, yeah. It matters, but it doesn't. This is an interesting vote. Now, it is a standard protocol that you obviously pursue the federal grant because it's $50 million worth of security. I don't know where you would get the money otherwise. So it is an important step, and the RNC has been very careful to say or very determined to say they want to see the results of this vote before they make a decision. So you have that aspect, but there's certainly nothing that would prevent the convention from coming here if council fought it. But I mean, why, if you're the Republican National Committee, though, why would you want to go into a city where you already have that kind of political cauldron?
Glenn.
We talked about the other cities that did not bid on the convention. I looked at the 25 largest U.S. cities, and Trump carried only three of them, and only one, Fort Worth, did he win by 51.7%. The other two he carried, Jacksonville, Florida, 48.5%, and Phoenix, 47.7%. So even in those two cities he carried, he did not get 50% of the vote.
People behind the scenes have said that it is rumored that the president would like this convention to be in Las Vegas, but that those around him say, that's not a good place for you to be. The optics is not good on that. Too close to Stormy, I guess.
let's go back for just a second and talk about the process, which you mentioned. So back in 2012, when Charlotte was hosting the DNC, the city had to vote on this. There are a couple of different aspects of this. There's the contract with the federal government for this $50 million grant for security, which we needed to do. And then there's a contract with the party, the host committee as well. And that will be needed here as well. It was my understanding that that's what they need to vote on. Whether they do that Monday or not is not really clear to me right now.
I think they're going to vote because, remember, the National Republican meeting starts Wednesday or Thursday in Austin, and that's ostensibly where the decision will be made. It doesn't have to be, but we're within 2 years. If you're following the normal calendar, that's how it would play out.
Right. So
President Trump really does not like criticism, so you have to wonder if another factor in this could be – I don't think there will be probably a no vote, but I think there could be a split vote and a lot of we don't want President Trump here demonstration. Does he start pushing harder against Charlotte?
Well, this is a battleground state. That's probably why the Republicans are even interested in having this convention here, because you'd have it in a purple state and one that could go either way, but in a blue city in a purple state. But I wonder if the president or anybody in the party has given this any thought. Given the president's apparently extreme dislike for his predecessor, isn't there any irony that he perhaps would see in holding his nomination, at which he is most likely to be renominated for a second term, in the same city that gave Barack Obama the opportunity to go back to the White House? Isn't there some irony in that?
There is a little bit of irony in that, but apparently that's not the deciding
factor. Does he do irony?
I don't know. So the council meets Monday night.
Check Twitter.
That's right, to look at the contract between the host committee and the RNC. Of the 11 members on council, we know that two have said they're going to vote no. That leaves two Republicans who we know are going to vote yes. And then we have Dimple Ajmera, Larkin Eggleston, both of whom are on the fence, Braxton Winston, who's on the fence.
Well, he didn't
Julie
sound
Isolt
on
has,
the fence.
Well,
but
Julie Isolt says yes, but even if Braxton goes no, isn't that enough yes votes?
Yeah, I don't think they have enough to
kill
this.
I don't see six no
this.
Votes
yeah,
here.
Yeah.
Either.
Okay. But I do think – I think Ann's point is an interesting one, which is if this turns into some kind of outrageous melee on Monday – and this begins to trickle up to Washington. Remember, ultimately, the decision would rest with the president. I mean, if the president stepped in and said, I want to go to Jacksonville, they'd go to Jacksonville. If it becomes noisy enough and irritates the president or people close to him or party higher-ups, then maybe they say, we're going somewhere else, like Las Vegas.
I would say keep in mind those numbers I just read. They need a large city. They need certain things. There aren't any large cities that could where
well,
he's
remember,
popular.
But remember, Vegas will still take them. Vegas has said that they'll take their RNC, so.
And it's a big gamble, so.
Oh, look at
they're
that.
In,
huh?
They're
Did you
in
roll the dice on that?
Yeah.
It's a new day for this organization, and hopefully we'll have bigger and better things to come, including Super Bowl championships in the future.
You may have noticed we've changed topics. That's David Tepper, who has officially,
smooth segue.
Thank you very much. He has officially taken over the ownership of the Carolina Panthers at his very first news conference. You were there. I saw you on television.
Oh, God. I'm
there
sorry.
You were, Eric. And you called this in your article about it, Panthers 2.0. Is that what it is?
Well, I mean, it's certainly a dramatic change from the first 25 years. Several things struck me. First of all, you mentioned press conferences. Those are few and far between when it comes to owners in that stadium. But also, just look at David Tepper himself. He is wearing slacks. He's wearing a button-down shirt that's maybe halfway buttoned.
Yeah.
This
Pretty
is
macho.
Right. This is not the sort of Southern aristocratic banker image that Jerry Richardson presented publicly. And also, he's a lot more off the cuff. That's the other thing that you notice about Tepper. So I do think there are a lot of changes coming. And obviously, we've already seen a couple of executive level changes this week. And he made it clear that he has his eye on a lot of real estate projects as well. So, yeah, I think it's going to be very different over there on
Main Street. And he was asked about the issue that brought down Mr. Richardson. And in response to that question and several others, his response was, that was then, this is now. And one of the things he referred to was the way the culture of the Panthers organization has been put together, which led to Jerry Richardson's downfall.
I think there's been an atmosphere where this organization, I'm talking more on the business side, wasn't allowed to be a team, and they was not able to go up and talk about things. Okay? There's going to be no impediment to that in the future.
So he pledged a more open family, his words, family atmosphere. Did he talk about ending non-disclosure agreements?
He did.
He said we won't do that anymore. And he said, if I do something that people are going to criticize, they should be talking about me. And I felt that he was very comfortable with the reporters and kind of candid in his remarks. And remember, we never got to talk to Jerry Richardson maybe once during his tenure, twice, you know. So I do think it's going to be a different era and a different feeling around the clubhouse.
I did have a little bit of skepticism, though, about the idea that it will be easy to criticize him. Hmm. I mean, he is clearly vowing not to make the mistakes of his predecessor, but if he makes his own mistakes, it's never easy to criticize the person that you work for. And there may be no non-disclosure agreements, but you always have the option to quit and go public and see if, you know, if people will listen to you over one of the most powerful people in town. That's, yeah. you know.
But this is a guy who runs another business, and yeah. he said during the press conference one of his first things will be to hire a president or a general manager to run the club. And so I think there could be a different feeling just because the guy who owns the club is not in there running the thing day to day.
And I had the opportunity to interview Mr. Richardson in front of an audience for about 2 hours a couple of years ago. And I will tell you, he is a formidable presence in the room, a formidable presence.
And he knew that, and he used he
So
used,
if that's the way he operated in the yeah. stadium, I could see where –
Yeah, and he was intimidating. I don't know how many people remember, but he was a lead negotiator in the collective bargaining talks with the players, and there were plenty of people who made note that he was very aggressive, condescending at times, and as you say, he had
and
a—
difficult to read. You didn't know—
Yeah.
I always assumed that he was— thinking bad things. Just because of the look in his eyes. I was very careful about how I worded questions.
I did want to mention one thing, though, Mike. When we're talking about the work culture of the Panthers, in a lot of ways, David Tepper said a lot of the right things. But in other ways, he bristled when he was asked specifically about, okay, do you want to investigate and explore further what was within that culture? Who else could have been culpable? He pushed back on that a little bit. And remember, he's part of the NFL. And the NFL, while they fined Jerry Richardson $2.75 million as he was collecting $1 billion, on the other hand, from selling the team, they weren't very specific about any of this. They just said it was substantiated, and then they said, oh, by the way, there were similar incidents, but we didn't get into that. So there's still a lot of things that I think offend people in terms of, you know, all the laundry has not been aired in this.
Okay. You only have about 45 seconds left. See if you can beat Braxton Winston. He did talk about practice fields, and he did allude to facilities.
Yes, so I think a training center.
Statues. And statues.
And statues. Oh, yes. Well, yes. Yeah. The statue's staying.
We should probably talk about that. Go ahead, Glenn.
No. Go ahead.
I was going to say.
Statue is staying by statute.
By statute. Training center, training fields, I think, will be built elsewhere, within the Charlotte region. And it sounds like he will take on some stadium renovations, pretty aggressive ones, but he didn't give us details.
He said he would be talking to city officials about it. It's something that has to happen to improve the business.
Okay. I want to talk more about that in a second. We'll come back and talk about that, and we'll also talk about the CIAA tournament because they may be pulling up stakes as well. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Hi, Mike Collins. Join me, and She Says podcast host Sarah D'Elia for a special public conversation, Beyond, She Says, Sexual Assault in Charlotte. That's Thursday, August the 2nd at 7 p.m. at McGlowan Theater at Spirit Square. Registration at WFAE.org. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. It's the local news roundup. We're 20 minutes away from the national news roundup with 1A and Joshua Johnson. But I have David Borax from WFAE News, Ann Doss Helms from the Charlotte Observer, Eric Spanberg from the Charlotte Business Journal, and from QCityMetro.com, Glenn Birkins. Very quickly, if David Tepper takes the practice fields, because I know he wants to spread the wealth, he considers this a Carolina's team, so there's been a rumor that he would want to put the practice fields in South Carolina. Would that then free up land space to build a new stadium on the practice fields? Because I know he wants to have some land development opportunities and ways to increase revenue.
Yeah, it sounds like it would free up land for development. I don't think it would be for a stadium. Based on what he's told us so far, he likes the stadium's location, and it seems like he...
That's the only way you could keep the stadium in that location and really have a new stadium. just to build
a build one next door. Yeah.
Well, yeah, yeah. I think that he is going for a substantial makeover of the existing stadium.
Okay.
That's the feeling I get.
Will that be financed by the city, or be financed by the fact that if he develops the practice fields, there'll be economic development money coming to him.
He laid out an argument the other day for why local tax revenue should be spent on upgrading the stadium. And okay. He was pretty specific that he was talking about the tourism tax revenues that we have. That money is available. He says, look, if I bring extra business here to downtown, we should share that. And so I think he's going to be making that case to the city leaders.
And he's talking about having more events. I know he wants to bring high school playoff games to the stadium.
That is another example of being a direct contrast to Jerry Richardson. Even after the Panthers gave the 5 day, or they didn't give, they exchanged the 5 rent-free dates to the city for the $75 million worth of taxpayer money for the renovations. Really, all they've had is soccer and college football. Unlike a number of other NFL stadiums, they've had two concerts in 22 years. Most stadiums have at least a couple.
And they would have hosted Barack Obama's acceptance speech had it not been for the weather.
Yes, they would have hosted that, but they have not had concerts. They've never had the high school football state championship, which is a pretty standard thing in a lot of states because they want to play in the NFL stadium. So they're going to be much more aggressive. That is the thing that really came out.
And you mentioned soccer. He mentioned possibly bringing professional soccer to Charlotte.
This is the second time he's done that. When we were down in Atlanta for the owner vote, in his very brief press conference there, he mentioned Major League Soccer. He mentioned it again. I don't think that David Tepper is just throwing that out as, by the way, I think soccer's interesting. No. I think it's a pretty sure thing that he's going to make a move to get a MLS team here, and I'm very curious what Marcus Smith thinks about that because he's led the effort for the past year.
The last question in the press conference came from Scott Fowler from The Observer, and it was about Jerry Richardson's statue that's out front. And Scott Fowler has made no bones about saying in the paper that he thinks that statue ought to go. I don't have the clip of what David Tepper
said. We don't have the clip,
say.
But here's what he said. I'm contractually obligated to keep that statue as it is. And that was the end of the press conference. We didn't get any more information. How did that get negotiated into the contract? Who asked for it? Lots of questions about that.
And Scott Fowler wrote an interesting analysis in which he said one take is that poor old David Tepper kind of got strong-armed into something that he didn't want or that's undesirable. And he said another take is that's not so bad for David Tepper because whatever he does with that statue will make a lot of people angry. Taking it down would make a lot of people angry.
Yeah. So now it takes him off the hook.
Yeah, now he kind of says, sorry, it's in the contract and walks away.
Would it really make a lot of people angry? I'd like to see the polls on that. And maybe it would. I don't know.
I think it would in this environment.
Yeah.
You know, there are still questions about other things with Jerry Richardson's name on it, like the stadium at UNC Charlotte, and that one is an unanswered question at the moment.
Lots of things that were offered.
Yes.
Well, let's switch gears to sports. The CIAA, the Central Intercollegiate Athletic Association, has held their annual basketball tournament here since 2006. They moved their offices to Charlotte as well. But the contract to host the tournament ends with the 2020 tournament here in Charlotte. And the organization is now reportedly shopping things around. Is this more than just a negotiating tactic?
It's hard to tell. I think they're probably serious about looking around, but obviously, anytime you are renegotiating these types of contracts, there's a certain amount of gamesmanship involved. But they've been here a long time, and I think they are hearing from locals as well that, you know, maybe it's time to...
Well, it would seem to me that if you have a tournament here, 15 years by 2020, that's been here for 15 years, your fan base is going to get...
Yeah,
we've done Charlotte.
Right.
Because you go to the basketball games for X number of hours, and then...
Or not.
And then you're out exploring the town that you're in. So if you've been exploring the town for 15 years, you pretty much have explored the town.
But the problem is where? Where do you go after Charlotte? When you look at other CIAA cities, they just simply don't compare to Charlotte in a number of ways. So I think, and to a large degree, the conference probably feels a little stuck here. Because we have the hotels, because we have the walkable downtown and all of the amenities that people want, You're not going to find that in many of the other cities.
But there were some things that they didn't like. CIAA Board Chair James Anderson says, and I quote here, that even though Charlotte has been a good host and we've had a good relationship with Charlotte, there are a couple things that, you know, we consistently haven't been happy with. For example, the price gouging of hotels. We can't seem to get the hotels in Charlotte to agree on at least a sensible range of prices versus some hotels being more renegade, and they tend to price gouge at the last minute. So we're looking for a relationship with the city where we can probably get more consensus on things like that. And he referenced something that made headlines here a couple of years ago, the so-called CIAA surcharge.
You know, every now and then something called a CIAA fee shows up on a bill, and we're never given a reasonable explanation. We just want to make sure that that doesn't happen anymore, and that if we do choose to go to another location, that that is one of the things that must be addressed in any relationship with a new city.
And Jackie McWilliams, the CIAA commissioner, also addressed this so-called black tax.
I think we've done a really good job in bringing the businesses together over the last couple of years, and we actually meet with some of the restaurants and some of the hotelers just to talk about any of the concerns and to make sure that those things don't happen in future years of the tournament.
Sounds a little bit about like bad cop, good cop there. She seems a little more open and generous in her opinion of what's going on here. But is that more than the reference to what we all heard about several years ago at the Ritz-Carlton, where there was a CIAA fee on the bar tabs of people who came into the Ritz?
And remember, they paid a fine, I believe, to
they
the
did.
State, and they also made a donation to try and obviously foster a better relationship. This has been interesting throughout the CIAA's run. On the one hand, it is the single most valuable annual tourism event.
$50.5 million last year.
And a lot of people obviously recognize that. I'm talking about people beyond the CIAA. But it has always been fraught with this racial edge about whether the CIAA is being treated fairly, whether there is stereotyping, whether, you know, some of the shootings and things that have happened at unsanctioned CIAA events, but during tournament week,
right.
You know, who's responsible
for
that?
Well, given that, does Charlotte want it?
Well, yes. And so there is just a lot at play here sort of under the surface. It's more than just your standard, okay, it's a big sporting event and tourism event. Here's X dollars, and let's go forward.
And I think the CIAA has never felt fully appreciated here. And I think they've got
why?
Good cause for all the things that we've talked about this morning,
okay.
Surcharges. You know, I don't know if it's true.
That happen when other conventions come to town?
It didn't happen.
Or other tournaments come
to town? The year that happened, the NCAAs were here, I don't know, 2-3 weeks.
Then.
And it didn't happen then. Okay. So that is a very sore spot, obviously.
Parking. And there's also been discussions about the special events ordinance that we had and how that was being applied differently during the CIAA. So, I mean,
where police can check your backpacks and you can't carry certain things.
And that raises questions about whether there's a racial edge to that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the bids for the new city, or if there is a new city, are due on September the 9th because our agreement ends with the 2020 tournament. Are we being asked to bid again? Is anybody being asked to bid? Will we bid?
Tom Murray from CRVA says he expects the city to bid.
I think Jackie McWilliams said they are very eager to see a bid, and that you know, she was speaking very highly of Charlotte.
It seems like there's a little bit of a division within the leadership of the CIAA. Some would like to see it go elsewhere. Jackie McWilliams, I think, would be in the camp of, you know, where our headquarters is here.
She lives
here. We've been
here
all these years. She lives here. I think she would like to see it stay here. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
So on Monday night, President Trump announced his nomination of Brett Kavanaugh to replace Justice Anthony Kennedy on the Supreme Court. Members of the North Carolina delegation to Congress responded almost immediately. Reaction seems split. As you might imagine, along political lines, North Carolina Republican Senator Tom Tillis called the judge's credentials impeccable and called him a mainstream and fair-minded jurist.
The nominee that the president has put forth has some of the most remarkable academic and bench credentials of virtually any nominee in modern times. So I think that if you look at his record, you can see that he doesn't want to be an activist. He doesn't want to be a legislator. He wants to be a judge who interprets the Constitution and the laws in the way that I think any judge of the Supreme Court or justice should.
So we have North Carolina Democrats on the delegation, too. What have they been saying?
Just like the debate over the RNC here. I think if you're a good Democrat right now, your default setting is Trump says something, I'm against it. Right. And I'm not sure that's a good thing, but I think that's where we are. And so the Democrats have come out against this nomination.
Our other Republican Senator, Richard Burr, pointed out that this is the Senate's constitutional charge to provide its advice and consent, that's from the Constitution, to the president on his nominee to fill this Supreme Court vacancy. And I'm not sure what he said when Barack Obama nominated Merrick Garland and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell refused to hold hearings because it was an election year. But here's what Tom Tillis said at the time, back in 2016.
This is about principle, not the person the president has nominated. And it's why the majority of the Senate has chosen to use this unique situation as an opportunity to let the American people have a voice.
In other words, we won't vote because we want to see who the president will be, who the people choose for president. Well, this is also an election year. Have they changed their tunes?
They have. Mitch McConnell has said there is a difference between a midterm election and a presidential election. And so he's left it at that. And really, look, this all boils down to who's got the power. I mean, that's all this is. It's all right. That simple.
Okay. Another for-profit school is dropping out. We found out this week that the Art Institute of Charlotte will shut its doors, shut the doors of their three campuses in the state of North Carolina before the end of the year. Why?
One would assume that they're not making enough money on them. They're one of actually among 30 from Dream Center Education Holdings that are around the country, and they're going to close out the year in all of those, I believe.
For people who are not familiar with the Art Institute, because they're out in a suburban office park off of, I believe, out near where the Hornets used to play.
Yeah.
What are they? Are they a hospitality school like Johnson & Wales fundamentally, or are they an arts? Do they teach visual arts, painting? I know they teach culinary arts. What do they do?
Honestly, I'm not terribly familiar with them. I've been out there once for a visual arts show, so they do that.
Graphic design, web stuff, you know, kind of these newer trades that are out there and a big thing in Charlotte.
I mean, when the Charlotte School of Law closed, there was a lot of concern expressed about what the students would do because they weren't academically excelling at the time, and they probably had found they had a lot of debt, et cetera, that had to be paid off. What about these students? Are they going to be able to transfer their credits to UNC Charlotte, to Johnson & Wales, to whomever?
Don't know about the transfer. I know, like, Wake Tech has already been reaching out to some of these students. I assume that there will be some other institutions saying, come here, you can finish out. But I don't know the details of how the credits will transfer. You caught me on something that broke while I was on vacation.
All right.
Not too sure about that either. But another issue here is that these schools were owned by this for-profit company, and there was a plan to transition to a nonprofit. I think whether the students could get federally guaranteed student loans hinged on that change, and it hasn't happened. And I think the lack of the federal student loan money was something that played into the decision to close all these schools.
So teachers got a message this week in Charlotte-Mecklenburg. If you you should go back to school and get your law degree, because they gave a raise to the CMS top lawyer, George Battle, gave him a $28,000 a year raise. That takes him to $229,000. Why now?
Well, one board member said he asked for this last year, and there was a whole lot going on, so they waited until this year. This is the time of year, the budget year is starting. It's also my annual evaluation time, so I keep writing about these big CMS raises in hopes of inspiring my editors, and it's not working very well. But they're saying that he made the case that he is doing this extraordinarily complex work. He was being paid significantly less than the Charlotte City Attorney and the Mecklenburg County Attorney. This just kind of puts him in line with it. So
he was making around $200,000. The county attorney makes $225,000. The city attorney makes $248,492.
Right.
And now George Battle will make $229,000. Puts him in the middle.
Right. And I have not heard a huge amount of outcry since writing about this. You know, CMS sometimes tends to do things in a way that kind of makes you scratch your head. And they had several other contracts that were on the agenda and posted. And this one they introduced from the dais and kind of said, okay, we're voting on this one too. But it doesn't seem to be anything particularly nefarious. It's, you know, he's been making the case and he's been getting raises. Of course, anybody who's making you more than you are is overpaid. So teachers are going to look at this and say, wow, I did not get $20,000.
And Eric, the airport is going to expand next week. Concourse A is going to get
Concourse
bigger.
A, yes. $200 million expansion, 9 gates. It is not the same look as the rest of the airport. And they're touting the technology to UBS ports, which tells you about life in America these days. If you don't have two chargers, how in the world can you wait for anything?
And you also reported, David, that the terminal has been dubbed the world's largest data-driven public art piece. What's
there is
the
a piece
part?
In there by this Turkish-American artist. It's called Interconnected, and it takes airport data like passenger traffic and all that and translates it into these moving images. It's really cool to watch. You could stand for hours and watch this thing.
You did, didn't you?
I did.
Okay. David Morax from WFAE News, and Doss Helms from the Charlotte Observer, Eric Spanberg from the Charlotte Business Journal, Glenn Birkin from QCityMetro.com. Thank you all for the air. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.